If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. No, wait. It's free. There's creation tools that allows you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. No, wait, did you hear me? It is everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
Welcome to Grace Talks, produced by Grace Media Productions and hosted by T-Dub Entertainment. Grace Talks is a podcast that informs and inspires to help you grow gracefully. Here you can enjoy great conversations, experience special guests, and encounter grace moments. Tune in now for an all-new episode of Grace Talks.
First of all, tonight, I want to talk about the Chiefs versus the Jaguars. What an interesting game. I'm gonna leave it to you guys to give me what you're thinking. First of all, I want to say, what do you feel was the breakdown with Trevor Lawrence and the offense? What was the major breakdown that happened with them?
You know, I just got to say that, honestly, I don't think Trevor Lawrence is ready for primetime yet. They went from winning two games last year to being in the divisional round this year. So all in all, I mean, it was a major step up. But, I mean, they were going up against a Chiefs team that's been to four straight AFC conference title games. And obviously, I mean, a lot of people look at them as the premier team in the NFL. I mean, let's not think that Patrick Mahomes' high ankle sprain didn't have a lot to do with that final score. I mean, Chad Henne came in and made a really nice drive, touchdown drive when he came in. But, I mean, all in all, Trevor Lawrence stayed mistake-free for the most part. I mean, he only threw one interception, and that was in the fourth quarter. Those two turnovers in the fourth quarter kind of did them in. But, I mean, they kept it relatively close. And, I mean, aside from those two fourth-quarter mistakes, I mean, they played a really – pretty solid football game. And I mean, they had a chance. It was close in the fourth quarter. I mean, those two turnovers, like I said, kind of did them in, but you got to give the Chiefs credit. I mean, even with Mahomes hobbled, they still found a way to come out with the victory in the end.
Basically, to piggyback off what you said, the Jaguars do not have the experience. You know, Travis Etienne, I have known his family. I don't know him personally, but I've been knowing his family for 20 plus years.
And he's going to be a dynamic running back in this league.
You know, to me, it seemed like they both thought they were at Clemson rather than in the NFL, and they had that Clemson mindset rather than NFL. But I think this year has done them a world of goodness, that experience. You got to lose to know how to win. And when you're going up against the elite, I think they'll be better prepared. Like you said, are they ready for prime time? They're about 3 years away. But I think they're better prepared next year than they have ever been based upon the experiences of this year.
Absolutely.
Will?
I mean, I think that they just about covered all of it. I think that this game was, I think, kind of more than anything. Well, not more than anything, but I think that it was more Jacksonville's defense not doing a whole lot. I mean, they let Chad Henne come in and score a touchdown. You know, he just drove down the field 90-something yards, 7 minutes, and scored a touchdown. And, I mean, yeah, they've got Travis Kelce, who's, like, the baddest man in the league. But still, I mean, you can't even stop the backup quarterback from scoring a touchdown. Hold him to a field goal, man. all that said, I mean, they kept it competitive. I thought Trevor Lawrence looked really good for all the context that we've already talked about. You know, all the controversy from last season. It, like, this is kind of really his first year now, you know, with that in mind. Doug Peterson did a phenomenal job this season. Is probably the story of the Jacksonville Jaguars is how phenomenal Doug Peterson has been for that program.
And as Urban alluded to, sorry to interrupt you, T, but as Urban alluded to, I mean, experience means everything. And also, Jacksonville was second to last in the NFL this year in missed tackles. So, I mean, on those third and longs, even with Mahomes being hobbled, I mean, yeah, he has the baddest tight end on the planet who just seemed to roam free all day long.
He's like always open in the middle. You know he's going to be in the middle. Why aren't you covering him?
Exactly. I mean, even before Mahomes got hurt, he was shredding the middle of that secondary in the middle of the field. And even when he was hobbled, I mean, when you're forced into third and long and you're facing a team that's second to last in missed tackle percentage, I mean, they were able to get what they needed when they needed to. But like Urban said, that experience is going to carry over. And I think going forward, that's going to be a team to be reckoned with for many years.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking the exact same thing, that maybe another year to two, Jacksonville will be a major threat in the NFL. But that being said, do you feel that Kansas City deserves to be ranked as number one in the AFC, Evan?
Oh, very much so. I mean, they set a franchise record this year for wins in a season with 14. Everybody thought that with Tyreek Hill departing from Miami that their offense was going to have a major drop-off. But, I mean, all they did was bring in Marquez Valdes-Scantling and Juju Smith-Schuster, and they combined for 1,500 receiving yards. And then you got Travis Kelce having a career year. And then you got the relatively unknown Pacheco in the backfield who took the starting spot away from Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I mean, that dude averaged five yards a carry. He went from a relative unknown to superstar in the backfield. And, I mean, you can't take anything away from what Kansas City has done this year. I mean, their offense still dynamic as ever. It's not like they really missed a beat. And then they still got Chris Jones on defense just wrecking havoc in the backfield. So, I mean, yeah, for a team that set a franchise record and wins this year for, you know, when everybody thought they would have an offensive drop-off, they look good as ever. And I think they were more than deserving of the number one seed.
In a very competitive AFC.
Exactly.
The NFC is not super competitive, or at least not as competitive as the AFC is the past couple of years. There are two teams right behind Kansas in Buffalo and Cincinnati those are the top three teams in the AFC, and they're going to be for what seems like going to be a while. They're just as good as Kansas is. There's obviously both of those teams don't have a whole game played that Kansas did for their record this year, because their game against each other got canceled. But they're right there. So for Kansas to be able to maintain the number one seed over, you know, two teams like that, yeah, they deserve to be there, 100%.
Catch up. What do you rank them as?
Well, they did it on the field. They did it on the field. I was always taught, this was from high school, if you need help to get there, you don't need to be there. Kansas City showed from the beginning of the season up until now, they did everything in their power to deserve where they are. They set a goal out and they're striving for it. You can't take nothing from it.
Mm. Could they, asking everybody here, Evan, do you feel like Kansas City could have played any better in that game versus Jacksonville?
I mean, yeah, there's obviously areas that you can nitpick. I mean, offensively they struggled, but then again, we're talking about the best quarterback in the league who was hobbled with a high ankle sprain. Once he sort of went down, everybody on the planet probably knew that their offensive production was going to be a little bit limited or not be as good because, I mean, if you're missing your best player who is supposed to be moving the ball down the field, even with as weak a defense as Jacksonville had, I mean, it was still going to be a struggle when your best player is having a hard time taking two steps forward. I mean, he was hobbled the entire game. And even though he didn't want to be taken out, like Will alluded to, when Chad Henne came in there, he walked right down the field and let him on a touchdown drive. So, I mean, I think that the offense may have been a little bit better with Chad Henne playing a little bit more because Jacksonville's defense was kind of playing catch up all game long. And I mean, the fact that he looked as good as he did when he came into play tells me that, yeah, they could have played better, but with Andy Reid at the helm and a team with as much experience as Kansas City had over a team with limited experience like Jacksonville, I mean, you still knew that they were going to pull it out in the end, and that's what they did. I mean, they got the big plays when they needed them, especially on defense. And I mean, you got to give your hats off to them, because obviously this upcoming weekend against Cincinnati is going to provide a much bigger test for them.
Yeah, I don't think that offense could have been any better. Not in any real sense. Like, yeah, sure, on paper, you could have maybe done better. Like, we've seen them score 50 points before. They didn't score 50 points. But they didn't make almost any offensive mistakes. And that's the more important thing, is are you messing things up, or are you just having a, you know, are they just really bad? I think that if anything, they could have maybe been better on defense, but I always think they can be better on defense. They let a team like Jacksonville, who, you know, as positive as we were about them previously, they're still Jacksonville. They're still from the AFC South. You know, they're still not a playoff competitive team. They had a miracle to even get to this game. So to let them score several times and keep the game competitive, like, yeah, sure, Patrick Mahomes was out for one drive, but I mean, their defense always is lacking, in my opinion. And they get away with it because their offense is almost always perfect.
Very good point.
Well, a lot of times we play to the level of our competition.
Yeah.
And very much so. Going into the game with your top player not 100%, it reminds me of two guys in the woods. And there's bears there. And one guy said, well, man, we have to outrun the bears. Another guy said, I don't have to outrun the bear. I just have to outrun you. And that's what it was. We have to outrun you and let the bear catch you. And it was a perfect game plan, not being perfect in all aspects. But let's come up with a game plan that is good enough to win. And they did their job. Week in, week out, you can't take it from them. You can bet against them. You can hate against them, but you can't take it away from them. Week in and week out, they find a way to get it done.
So we agree that absolutely next year, Jacksonville will be back in the playoffs, or just will play better.
They'll be in the playoffs, but that's because half the league makes the playoffs these days more than anything.
And also, I mean, they're playing in the AFC South.
Definitely the second point is they play in the AFC South, which is a division waiting for somebody to wake up.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, the Titans, they're a mystery, but with Ryan, as long as Ryan Tannehill is leading that team, I always think that they're going to have a disadvantage because I mean, he's just not – I don't see him as – a long-term franchise quarterback. I mean, Derrick Henry is there, obviously, and that dude, I mean, he's put Tennessee on his back I don't know how many times, but at the same time, like we just said, playing in that division gives them an automatic advantage, and I think this experience is only going to make them better and even more hungry. I mean, ETN and Lawrence come from a winning culture in Clemson, and those are the types of guys that you want in your locker room because they're going to use a losing experience to only make them better. And I think it's going to carry over for many years to come.
Yeah. If their only competition to just get into the wild card is Tennessee, that's a good place to be. You know, Indianapolis is in shambles. Houston's in shambles. It's a good time to not be one of those two teams in the AFC South. You're going to get at least a chance to get in the playoffs.
Catch up. Why are you stretching your eyes like that?
it's all facts. It's all facts. You ain't got to do much in that conference. You know, bro, for real, all of us, we could have combined, did 20, 30 push-ups, and we might have made the playoffs if we'd have been in that conference. So.
Right.
In that division. So. Well, We will definitely see what Jacksonville has to offer next season. When we come back, we'll dive into the Bills-Bengals game, and I'm sure all of America and all of football fans were shocked by a lot of things that transpired in that game. We'll be right back to talk about it. We're back. Thank you for tuning in to Grace Talks. We're talking about NFL playoffs and getting ready to move to the championship games this weekend. But just really rehashing what went right, what went wrong for the divisional round. Now we want to talk about the Bills and Bengals. And guys, your faces, I've talked to you all one-on-one, but I just have to hear it. So I need to know, Will, do you feel that the snow had any bearing on how badly Josh Allen played?
No, not at all. And I don't think Josh Allen played poorly at all either. I think that the Bengals were just better is really all that it came down to. There's a couple of times that Josh made a questionable throw, but he makes those questionable throws. It's just something that he does. I don't think that they play and they practice and train out there in the snow. That's part of fighting for home field advantage, and that's part of what these northern teams take great pride in when they do have an open air stadium like Green Bay and Chicago and Buffalo. Kansas City is also open air, although that's a little bit more Midwest, but it gets cold there.
Baltimore.
Yeah, in Baltimore. But you got to be in the playoffs to be in this discussion, Terrence. I'm sorry. And those boys got eliminated. But for that specifically, no, I don't think that was an issue whatsoever. I just think that sometimes Josh Allen isn't everything that we expect him to be every single week because he is spectacular. And so we think that he's always going to be spectacular. And this time he was just a little bit less.
Okay. It boiled down to who wanted it more. That's what happened. I had the Bills. I predicted the Bills to take it off. Von Miller's dear to my heart, even though he's out for the season. With Mr. Hamlin in his situation, I thought they would rally around to go as far as they could based upon the people who were not on the field. Did they have the talent to do it? Yes. Did they have the coaching to do it? Yes. But when you talk about it, and I see Miami is represented here tonight, and I've never hated on the U. But when you talk about them boys, them Bayou Bengal boys, they came ready to play. And they just would not be denied. It's no matter what you're doing, they ain't being denied. Let's look at number 9 for the Bengals. I hear people say he's arrogant. One of the most humble human beings you can actually find to have the type of spotlight on him and to handle it the way that he handled it. He does his talking on the field. Cincinnati came offense, defense, special teams, ready to go to the next game, and they played like it.
And, I mean, honestly, I think this game showed me that Sean McDermott may not have what it takes to take the Bills to the next level. I mean, Zach Taylor won that chess game, like, clean and dry, like Urban alluded to. And you have that offense. And we were just talking about missed tackles in the last segment. Buffalo was third to last in the NFL this year in missed tackles and missed tackles percentage. Against an offense that features guys like Burrow, Chase, Boyd, Higgins, Joe Mixon, Samaje Perine. I mean, that could very well be the best offense in the NFL. I mean, I know everybody wants to talk about the Chiefs and the Bills and their electric offense, but I mean, we're talking about a team that, I mean, they were being disrespected all week. The NFL was already selling tickets to the Buffalo Kansas City game in Atlanta in the neutral site all week. Cincinnati knew all about that. And you could tell by their comments going into the game that they felt disrespected and they were going to come out and play like it. But when you don't have a good tackling defense against an offense like that, you're going to struggle. And I mean, Buffalo's offense is honestly way too predictable. On first and second down, I mean, it's easy to kind of pinpoint what they're going to do. And when forced into third and long against an above average defense like Cincinnati's, I mean, you're going to run into a world of trouble. And when they were forced to come back through the air at the end of the game, I mean, I think it let Cincinnati kind of settle into that, I don't know what that defense is called, like the passing defense, but I mean, Buffalo was forced to throw all game because they were put in that very big deficit at the very beginning of the game. And I think that hurt them long term. It was just too difficult to come back against a good offense like that.
Yeah. So with the injuries, because we all know that Cincinnati suffered some losses to their offensive line, my question is, has it seemed to help them? Are they just coping, or are they, I mean, Will, what do you think? Because I didn't see the lack in the offensive line. It didn't seem to suffer any lack. So has this injury thing, and I don't even know if they're going to be ready for this week, but has this injury thing helped or harmed Cincinnati?
I think that they just have enough depth to weather it. I think that they're just doing is. Not to say coping, you know, that sounds a little bit negative, I think, but it's just next man up, and the next man up is up to the task. I think that's all that's happening there. It wasn't a problem against Baltimore. It's all anybody talked about going into that game. It wasn't a problem this week. It's all anybody talked about going into that game. It's not going to be a problem this coming week.
Okay.
They're going to be fine. I don't think that it's a problem, but I don't think that there's also some kind of, like, you know, inspirational story that it's helped them because these guys stood up and did it, you know. I don't think anything like that either.
I'm gonna veer to the left a little bit on that. A good coach know how to disguise his weaknesses. We need 5 men on the line. We're not gonna worry about our Pro Bowlers because they're gonna do what they do every Sunday. Let's worry about the guy that don't get many reps and that's getting beat badly in practice, but we have to put him in. Since we know he get beat badly in practice, let's make the adjustments for him getting beat badly on the play, so we will revert to make him look good, if you will. If I know he's going to get beat, who's in front of him, and let me make a minor adjustment. Do I need a running back to chip the guy that's going to beat him and then fly off in the flat or go across the middle? Or do I run Joe Burrow around the opposite way? Or is this guy that's going to beat him, can Joe Burrow beat him to a place where he can get a good pass off? So it's more about disguising your weaknesses and making the necessary adjustments. Do I think they're capable of whoever they put there? Yeah, whoever they put there is going to do their job. But if we find ourselves weak, we can do some things to make some adjustments to make the weak guys still look good.
Zach Taylor is just a great, great football coach. He's very adaptable. Urban hit it right on the head. You learn how to disguise the weaknesses that you have within the team, because face it, this time of year, every team is battling, has a lot of injuries that they're dealing with. I mean, it's just playoff football. It's been a long year. And I mean, you can go back to Buffalo on their side of the ball. Their entire secondary was pretty much depleted. I mean, Elam was playing hurt the entire game. Tre'Davious White and Jordan Poyer ran into each other on that one play in the second half and nearly concussed each other. And then we're talking about DeMar Hamlin, who, I mean, he may never even play again. We don't know how far along he is in his recovery, if he's going to be able to play again. I'm just truly thankful that the man is still alive and breathing and making the recovery that he is. But I think injuries kind of get overstated a little bit this time of year, because we could take a deep dive into every team that's still left, and each one is going to have major injuries that they're dealing with on in important parts of their team. And like I said, Zach Taylor, he may be very well be become the next best head coach in this league. I mean, they went to the Super Bowl last year, and everybody went into this year thinking it was a fluke, and all they're doing is running roughshod on people on the road in the playoffs. Like, nobody thought that, you know, anybody would be able to win in Buffalo, but they didn't just beat Buffalo. I mean, they beat the door off them. I mean, it was pretty bad.
So I have the million-dollar question, I think. I appreciate and I think I will agree with all of your sentiments on the Bengals and their offensive line. But my million-dollar question that I'm pretty sure a lot of people asked in shows this week was, what happened to Diggs? I'm going to say it again. What happened to Stephon Diggs in this game?
I think he's, I mean, he's been building up to this for the second half of the season, at least, right? He's been kind of noisy about not getting targeted here and there and blah, blah, blah. In the way that receivers get every now and then, you know, every now and then some star receivers talking to, you know, he's upset about this, that, or the other thing. That's par for the course, whatever, right? But it's just, it's highlighted in these situations more than anything. These are the playoffs, and it's a high intensity situation, and this is going to be the rivalry going forward. Bills Bengals is going to be, so long as Josh Allen and Joe Burrow are successful in those two cities, that's the football rivalry of the next 10-15 years probably. So this is it building right here. You can see it whenever they fight each other on the field. You know, there's at least two scuffles that broke out during this game. Do they care? This is a big deal game, right? This is the premiere of the AFC, in my opinion, is these two teams. This is the premiere of the NFL. And so the emotions are high, and he's a vocal guy. He was vocal in Minnesota. He's vocal here.
Let's look at all the other weapons that Buffalo have. Again, what happened to Stephon Diggs? The coaching staff of Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah, good safeties and corners. That's what happened to Stephon Diggs.
The coaching staff of Cincinnati Bengals. When you can eliminate the weapons of your opposition, you know, I remember in high school we had a running back. He actually played for the San Francisco 49ers. Come out of West Jeff, Gary James. All-American back at LSU with Dalton Hilliard, the Hilliard James game. In high school, we had to play them, and he's going to get 200 yards. You're not going to stop him. He was averaging 40 points a game. Let him get his 200. Let's stop the rest of the team. So in Diggs' deal, we want to limit Stephon Diggs and his touches. But the defense was so good, we were pretty much able to shut him out rather than limit him. I believe the game plan was to limit his activity, but the way that the game went along, we just shut him out. So you want to know what happened to him to answer your question? The coaching staff of Cincinnati.
And honestly, Buffalo didn't adapt. It's been at proven. All. It's been proven this year that when – I mean, it's shown even when Buffalo – even though they won 13 games this year, when a team eliminates or takes Diggs' production away, I mean, Buffalo really doesn't have that secondary, like, number two threat at wideout. I mean, they have a bunch of really, really good playmakers, but they don't really have, like Cincinnati has T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase. I mean, they're interchangeable. But when a team shuts down Diggs' side of the field, it just goes to show that McDermott did not adapt. I mean, he could have, you know, thrown a little bit more maybe to Singletary or James Cook in the backfield, but he just kept targeting Diggs, and the Bengals were ready for it. And I mean, you know, football, like previous two have stated, it's an emotional game. And honestly, if there were camera angles available for an NFL sideline that people could see the sideline throughout the entire game, they would see people yelling at each other all game long, especially in the playoffs. I mean, when Diggs was pinpointed, obviously the media and everything is going to just focus on his situation, but it's an emotional game. We're talking about the playoffs. And I mean, I don't know if y'all heard, but you know, when Buffalo lost to Kansas City last year and the streams were all coming down in Kansas City, Diggs stood there in the middle of the field and he told himself that he would never let himself feel that way ever again. So, I mean, he expects a lot from himself and Josh Allen. And obviously, you know, I'm pretty sure he was more upset at McDermott's game plan than he was at Josh Allen for not throwing him the ball, because
yeah,
they did not adapt. And, I mean, it was evident throughout the entire game.
Adaptation is always important. And with that, my question is, Ketchup really, really focused on the staff, the coaching staff of Cincinnati. Cincinnati has come a long way. We've all seen that. My question is, with having Joe Burrow as your leader, do we put him now in the MVP conversation, or is he in the conversation, Will?
Oh, well, I guess he's in and out of the conversation on a weekly basis, like anybody else that's in and out of it on a weekly basis, right? On the season, he didn't have as good of a season statistically as some of the other guys that are in the conversation. I think he's the coolest cat in the league, right now. I think that they're going to beat Kansas this coming, week. I know that we're going to talk about that later on, but I think they're going back to the Super Bowl. It wouldn't surprise me if they go back to the Super Bowl again next year. It wouldn't be surprising. Joe Burrow is going to have a couple of rings before he's done. He's going to be a Hall of Fame, unless, barring some sort of horrific injury, which is always a risk. But if he doesn't get an MVP this season, which I don't think he's going to, he's going to get it at some point. There are MVP titles in his future, both in the regular season and the Super Bowl, I think.
I got a question. Why don't you think he would get an MVP this year?
I think people are going to... I think that Jalen Hurts and Patrick Mahomes Jalen Hurts has the better story, I think, the better narrative, because the Eagles have been so bad for so long. I think people look at that whenever the voters look at that whenever they vote.
And also, I mean, Patrick Mahomes set a franchise record for Kansas City in wins, and for a team that's been in five straight AFC title games now, for them to set a franchise record in wins like this year, I mean, without Tyreek Hill, I mean, he still threw for over 5,200 yards and 41 touchdowns. And, he's not the dual threat like Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson, but he still ran for 380. I mean, I think that gets lost in the conversation. He can make plays with his legs when he needs to. But, I mean, his amazing throwing capabilities overshadow that immensely.
Okay. I think Burrow... And I'm gonna be biased. When you look at a guy who had a mediocre year, who's looked at everything that's been thrown at him since last year, and he comes in game after game, I don't care whether we play in your stadium, my stadium, we could play on Mars, I'm going to punch you in the mouth. And that's what he does. And that's what a real most valuable player does. When it's time to step up, they step up when it counts. All of that we can talk about the regular season. Look at all other teams we can talk about for the regular seasons. Who stepped to the plate when they had to step to the plate and make it happen, taking away nothing from the Eagles quarterback. The guys were, man, Eagles a whole different team in the playoffs now that he's back.
Yeah. Definitely.
They're going Eagles to the Super Bowl. The very scary. And I would love, well, I'll wait till we get to that segment.
And, to piggyback off what they just said, Joe Burrow is one of those quarterbacks who focuses more so on football and team than himself. He blocks out all the noise. You don't see him on social media complaining about anything. You don't see him in the news for anything. That guy is all football all the time. He lives and breathes the sport of football. And I mean, that's evident in his play. It's in, it's evident in his swagger. I mean, the guy carries himself unlike any other quarterback I've seen. I mean, I call Patrick Mahomes the improviser because he's the best at making something out of nothing, but Burrow is him. And he's the next great thing in this league. I mean, I love Josh Allen, but as long as Sean McDermott's there, I think that's going to hinder their capability to move far in the playoffs consistently. And I mean, as long as Cincinnati keeps that offense together with Burrow and Higgins, and I mean, at that point, they just need a guy that can manage the game at the running back position. And Joe Mixon is exactly that. So yes, Burrow is, he's the next big thing in this league.
Well, I'm going to say this. You mentioned, you used the terminology, punch you in the mouth. Someone definitely got punched in the mouth this weekend. And when we come back, we're definitely going to talk about who that was.
If you have a question or would like us to discuss a specific topic, Grace Talks wants to hear from you. You can email us at gracetalks@graceforlife.com. That's grace_talks@grace-4-life.com.
Welcome back to Grace Talks, the sports edition. We're dealing with the divisional round playoffs and the games and the teams that are no longer in the playoffs. Now we move to the 49ers versus the Cowboys game. And I'm not sure which team you were going for in this game. So if you need to share that with us, that's fine. But did the Cowboys play that bad? Or were the 49ers just that good?
Combination. First of all, the Cowboys have been overrated. Cowboys is one of the most talented teams in the league year in, year out. Their problem on the sideline, they have too much help coaching.
Amen.
If you come in and let these guys do what you are paying them to do, you'll get better results. They are overrated. They were injured, but they were overrated. I've never been a Cowboy hater, if you will. Never been a fan. But a few years ago when Green Bay went into Dallas in wheelchairs and on crutches and beat them, I lost all respect for them because I understood a lot of the decisions weren't being made in the proper personnel. They were being made from people that has never played the game. So was I, like a lot of America, glad to see them go? Yes, because all of my Cowboy fan friends, I got a spot on the couch for them Sunday.
That was such an eloquent argument. I love it. Anyways, ultimately, I just don't think that Dak Prescott is a good pressure quarterback. I mean, we talked about in our last segment that, you know, I said that as long as Dak plays mistake-free football, then Dallas is going to give themselves a chance to win. And honestly, even in this game, factoring in his two interceptions, I mean, they still had a chance to win. I mean, their defense kept them in the game.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think Purdy played, you know, he played a meh game. I mean, he stayed mistake free and everything, but I mean, getting into the red zone, Dallas held them to a lot of field goals. But I mean, honestly, I mean, the difference maker here is Christian McCaffrey, and he has been all year long for San Francisco. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're undefeated and averaging 30 points a game with that man in the lineup. I mean, he's the most versatile backfield threat that I think this league has seen since Marshall Faulk is when he's healthy. I mean, he is just all over the place. And so ultimately, yeah, Dallas, you know, they just made too many mistakes. They shot themselves in the foot like they so often do. And I mean, if we're talking about coaching, I mean, Kyle Shanahan versus Mike McCarthy, I mean, I'll take Kyle Shanahan all day.
Yeah, I agree with that bit for sure. Over Mike McCarthy. You know, I thought, just to rag on Mike McCarthy a little bit, just because it's kind of fun to do. A couple of weeks ago, whenever Maher was missing all those extra points, I kept thinking, man, this is probably what Mike McCarthy wants, because now he just goes for two and goes for it on fourth every single time. He doesn't have to kick if his kicker can't kick, right? I don't trust his play calling in any way whatsoever. He won a Super Bowl with Green Bay, but I don't really know how he did, because look at everything he's done since then.
That bad man.
That's how it is, right? But the I think it was more the Cowboys being bad than it was the 49ers being good, because the 49ers did not play as, I mean, they obviously looked a lot better the week previously. Even just Purdy's stat lines were considerably better. He didn't throw a touchdown this week. He threw for like 200 yards or something, and that's about it. He made good decisions, you know, just like Evan had said, he made, you know, he played mistake-free football, and that's what you need in the playoffs more than anything. I still have them going all the way. I still believe in Purdy. I'm on the Purdy train. They're going to need to do better against Philadelphia than they were against Dallas, that's for sure. Dallas has a lot to thank their defense for saving themselves the embarrassment. I mean, just look at this thing. What is this?
that last play call, man. What in the hell was that?
So here's my question, Ketchup. Is it that the running game serves 49ers at another level? Is that the essential part of their game? Or are you like Will and you're on the Purdy train? Where do you lie?
I got a question for him.
Here we go.
Everybody. Who is Purdy? Who is this guy?
Until a few weeks ago, nobody knew.
He shows up in the starting lineup, and like you said, he makes mistake-free plays. He played on. He was able to manage the game pretty good. But now, Purdy, you're on a pretty good level of some pretty good talent out there, and you're going to have to step it up pretty good this week. Purdy, I think he has the capability to be developed, but this year, what I see, what he has to face, the way Dallas defense came in, next week, if that defense is half as good, with that offense, you're going to find out if he's Purdy or not, because now you're forcing him to make decisions to come from behind that he didn't have to do in the past.
I think in order to answer your question, I think they rely more heavily on the running backs because, in my opinion, as the playoffs go on, I mean, he's the fifth – I think he's only the fifth rookie quarterback to make the conference title game in NFL history. And those previous four quarterbacks were 0-4. I mean, I'm just leaning on history a little bit there. And also, when he was performing under pressure in his first six starts, he had a 121.2 passer rating, which was one of the best in the league. Against Dallas, he was 3-for-11 with a 39.6 passer rating. And that was just with Michael Parsons coming after him. This Philadelphia defense is light years better than the Dallas defense. So like Irvin alluded to, I think we're going to learn a lot about where he is as a quarterback. And I mean, if he can run through the playoffs and win the Super Bowl as Mr. Irrelevant, that would be the biggest story ever. I mean, in order to go on the road in Philadelphia right, and then beat a Chiefs or a Bengals team that, you know, has that experience as well. I mean, we'd be talking about one of the biggest storylines, but yes, I believe Christian McCaffrey is going to have to be the key going forward.
Well, I'm sure you all have been thinking about it, and I know everyone has heard about it. I think Will kind of touched on it earlier, so I'm going to go back to it to hear everybody's opinion. McCarthy, do you feel, Ketchup, that the firing was justified? Why or why not?
Yes, but the question was, why did they hire it?
It sounds like you and Will are on the same page. That's what it sounds like.
You know, when you are spending that kind of money, man, to be the best that you can be, you have to start with what you need to make the proper adjustments. You know, when was the last time they won a playoff game before this year? And then you're one and done this year? You have to start with your personnel on the sideline. And I hate the name. As a matter of fact, I'm not going to name drop. But there's one person that's on the sideline. If he stay off the sideline, you might be able to allow these guys to do a better job. And I think the biggest problem is there problems on the sideline? Yeah. But I think the problems on the sideline is rolled down from the top office. And when you're in the top office, if I hire you to do a job, let me allow you to do your job rather than try to, you know, direct you at every path. I never thought that was a good fit for Dallas. When he got hired, I thought they should have went in a different direction. But since I wasn't qualified for the job, I kept my mouth closed. But yeah, I think it's justified. But the main question, why was he ever hired? And I think me personally, that was a friendship basis. Who you know, get your job. What you know determines how long you keep it.
We all know that JJ's the puppet master in Dallas. He just wants to hire somebody that he can control, which is why I don't think that Sean Payton will ever go there. I mean, I think that that's probably the best option that they could go with. But as we all know, I mean, we all know who really runs that team week in and week out. And if he would just stay out of the way and let his coaches do their job, because as we previously alluded to, Dallas always has stacked talent on their team on both sides. I mean, imagine if JJ stayed out of the way and let his personnel do their job. And, you know, I honestly think they need to move on from their offensive coordinator as well. I mean, Dak had a career worst year. He was throwing picks left and right. Their offensive scheme needs to be redone a little bit. I mean, Zeke, everybody knows that he's not deserving of that massive contract that he's on. And honestly, I'm surprised nobody mentioned it, but when Pollard went down for Dallas, that was huge. Like, that changed the entire complexion of that game, because Pollard is far and away the best running back on that team and one of the top three playmakers on that team. So I think that when he got hurt, that really changed Dallas's trajectory, because that forced Prescott to just focus solely on CeeDee Lamb. And like we just talked about with Josh Allen and Diggs, when those two just keep trying to make connections, the defense is going to key in on that. But as per your question, I mean, I think the firing was justified. I never really understood the fit either. And I'm really curious as to see who they're going to hire going forward, because as long as JJ's alive, it's not going to matter who it is, I don't think.
You're so right. I was looking it up to verify it, and if I had gotten it sooner, I would have figured it out sooner. But Mike McCarthy is still the coach of the Cowboys. He did not get fired. They fired several other coaches, okay, but Mike McCarthy is going to be the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys for next season. Jerry Jones already said so. Now, after that, who knows, right? But for the time being, Jerry Jones has said, no, Mike McCarthy will return this next season.
Okay.
Okay, good. That's what I thought too,
initially. I would fire him, I think. But like both y'all have said, why did we hire him to begin with? I thought it was a strange decision from the get. But I think a lot of strange things happen in Dallas. So.
Okay.
You know, it's something that I think that, when are people going to start talking about the Cowboys being cursed? Like they talked about the Sox being cursed whenever they got rid of the Babe, right? If they got rid of Jimmy Johnson and they haven't done anything since. So when is that going to be the next talking point? We'll see what happens to the Dallas Cowboys, but maybe they don't win anything for 96 years or however it was in 2012 or whatever it was, Sox, or 2003.
Well, if you listen to Stephen A. Smith, he'll go on a tangent. I won't listen to Stephen A. Smith about anything. Yeah.
Well, we have to also see about the future of the Eagles, which is what we'll talk about when we come back, to see how they'll move forward in the playoffs. We'll be right back.
In life, we all ask the questions, why me? Why now? And why did this happen to me? But if we are honest with ourselves, as we keep living, we realize it had to happen. Why? Fate, purpose, destiny. In the long-anticipated release from G4 Life Publishing Company, author Terrence Williams takes us on a journey of some of life's lessons he has learned. On this journey, we find lessons which include makeover, it wasn't all her fault, legacy, and moving forward backwards. He encourages the reader to embrace the reality we all must face at some point in life, that whether you believe it or not, it had to happen.
Welcome back to Grace Talks, where we're dealing with the Giants and Eagles in this segment. And it was a pretty good game. I enjoyed it. But everyone believed Saquon Barkley was going to be a major emphasis in this game. What happened?
Well, the Philadelphia Eagles defense had the third, one of the highest pressure rates in NFL history, and they also had the third most sacks in NFL history this year. It was quite obvious that they knew from the start, if they limited Saquon, they could force Daniel Jones to be a player in the passing game. And honestly, the Minnesota game was the exact opposite of that. When Saquon had a great, Saquon was leading the team and he was helping them march down the field, and that was able to help Daniel Jones manage the game. And he did excellent. And so when the Eagles limited that and took away that running game, we were able to see just, the Giants team of years past.
So with that being said, watching the Eagles play like they did, I have to ask, is Jalen Hurts operating at 100% at this point?
My question is, was he ever not hurt as bad as they say he was? Yes, the answer to your question, yes, he is. The boy is rested. He's healed from the headache and the broken fingernail. but he's rested, he's healed, and he's showing it. Jalen Hurts is playing lights out football, and he would be my number two MVP behind Joe Burrow. But you can't take away what this guy brings to that offense.
So what do we see for the future of the Giants quarterback at this stage of life? Does he continue to improve, or will he remain at the same level? What are your thoughts?
I don't think that he gets any further than this. I think that this is as good as we see Daniel Jones be, is getting to this point. Maybe he makes it to another divisional round playoff game. Maybe they don't make it to another playoff game. I don't know what the New York Giants are going to do. The team didn't even renew him. He doesn't have a contract with New York going forward right now. Now they might change their mind before the deadline to get that fixed, but I mean, they might as well go for something else at this point. I don't know what Daniel Jones is going to do, but he's not going to be somebody that we talk about very much.
Okay. Well, guys, as we close this segment, I just have a question that I'm pretty sure all of you can chime in on. And that is, do the Eagles defense have what it takes to go all the way to the Super Bowl? And who are the major leaders that will do that for them?
That is an emphatic yes.
They absolutely do. They were
the first team in history to have four guys with double-digit sack totals this year. I mean, you're talking about Hassan Reddick, Josh Sweat, Javon Hargrave, and Brandon Graham. They all had at least 11. Reddick led the way with 16. That defense is one that we're not talking about, I think, because San Francisco's defense has been getting a lot of love recently. But one thing we have to remember, San Francisco is one of the worst passing defense teams in this league. And I think that gets overlooked a lot because the teams they play tend to rush the ball a little bit more, maybe. But Philadelphia's offense, I mean, you combine their running game and their passing game, man, it's whew. But yes, Philadelphia's defense has what it takes to go all the way.
Let me piggyback off of that. Former football player. Offense wins football games. Defense wins championships.
Amen.
It looks like that's all he has to say, guys. So
that's it.
Will, any other thoughts? Or can no, we take it to the house on that?
They're the real deal. Philadelphia is scary, and they've been scary all year.
Wow. Okay. Well, when we come back, guys, what we've been waiting for, we'll go ahead and hear from everybody about the look ahead to this weekend's championship games and see where everyone's head is about who will win and advance.
If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. No, wait. It's free. There's creation tools that allows you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. No, wait, did you hear me? It is everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
Well, we finally made it, guys. We're here now at the championship weekend. And four major hitters have made it: Kansas City, Cincinnati, San Francisco, and Philadelphia. Now, Will, I have to know, who's going to have the bigger game? And you can feel free to tell us why, out of Kansas City and Cincinnati. And will it be because of defense, special teams, offense, coaching? What do you think? Who's going to have the bigger game?
I think it's going to be Cincinnati. I think Cincinnati takes this game. I think that it's probably not going to be too high scoring. I think maybe we're looking at somewhere between 50 and 60 points total. I'm not going to try and give you a line. I'm terrible at calling scores, but I do think that they're probably going to be something like, 23-30 or something like that. I don't think it's going to be 45-46 or something, insane. I think that they're both offensive teams more than anything. Cincinnati's got the better defense between the two of them. What shines about both teams more than anything is their offense. They've got top tier quarterbacks, who could be quarterbacks, they're quarterbacks in the top five at the very least, with Hurts and Allen and maybe Lamar rounding out the other three. And they've got weapons like crazy. We've talked about Ja'Marr Chase several times. And we've also talked about T. Higgins several times for the Bengals. Last week I mentioned T. Higgins is a number one receiver that just happens to also play with Ja'Marr Chase. He would be the number one guy any other team in the NFL. And then Tyler Boyd, an excellent third guy behind those two. Joe Mixon, an insane running back these past couple of seasons. So we talk about Kansas all the time and all their weapons and all their offense. We've got, Kelce, who's a freak of nature at tight end, Patrick Mahomes, who's sort of like reinventing the sport in some ways. Tyreek Hill, who left, but it's a legacy of weapons in Kansas City over the last 5 to 6 years. But Cincinnati has every bit as good as weapons, if not better in some positions, I think. So I think that's what this game is going to be about. It's going to be who has got the football last, I think, is probably it's going to be one of those games, and if it might just be a field goal too. It might be that close.
Ketchup, do you agree or disagree?
I agree wholeheartedly with everything he said. I mean, there's nothing else to say behind that. Whoever has the ball last is going to win the game. I don't think it's going to be too high scoring. There will be points on the board. I'm thinking 35-31, just because it's Kansas City, but I'm taking Cincinnati. I'm thinking 35-31 Cincinnati.
E?
I think this game, honestly, it's centered around Patrick Mahomes' high ankle sprain. I think that's going to be a really big determining factor in this game. If he was fully healthy, I think it would have been closer. But I mean, we're talking about a Cincinnati team that's 3-0 against Burrow's 3-0 against Mahomes in the last three playoff matchups, or in the last three matchups overall. He obviously beat them last year. And I mean, one thing that people don't talk about is their play in the fourth quarter. Cincinnati has outscored Kansas City 26-6 in the fourth quarter in their last three matchups. So their defense has made the necessary adjustments when it needs to. And we're talking about Zach Taylor. The guy is a great adaptable coach. The guy plays how the game is being played, or he adjusts how the game is being played. And honestly, I think that that's what they're going to do against Kansas City this weekend. And I honestly don't think it's going to be all that close. I think Cincinnati is going to win 34-20. I think that the Ja'Marr Chase, Joe Burrow combo is going to really come to light this weekend. I mean, Ja'Marr Chase has 417 receiving yards against the Chiefs in the last three matchups. Joe Burrow is 24-29 throwing to him with a passer rating of 144 in those matchups. So, I mean, Kansas City hasn't been able to do anything to stop that. And that doesn't really – I mean, are they going to make those adjustments this weekend? I mean, they've got plenty of tape. We'll see. But I think Patrick Mahomes' injury is really going to slow this game down for Kansas City. And I think Cincinnati is going to kind of run away with it in the second half.
I'm going to go and say that Cincinnati I want Cincinnati to edge out, but I think it'll probably be by a field goal over Kansas City. But we shall definitely see. Moving over to San Francisco and Philadelphia. For me, I feel that the passing game will be the determining factor for this game, and I'm sure you all have what you want to share. But my question to you, will A.J. Brown have a big game, or will the 49ers defense contain him? Evan, what do you think?
You know, I think they can contain A.J. Brown, but then you got to deal with Smith on the other side. They both had at least 1,200 yards receiving this year, which was, I think, a first in Philadelphia history. And then they have a rushing attack that was led by three guys, including Hurts himself, who rushed for over 750 yards this year. We're talking about Miles Sanders and Gainwell, I believe his name is, and then Boston Scott. The guy scored another touchdown against the Giants this last weekend. 11 of his 19 career touchdowns were against the Giants, which I found to be really interesting.
Yeah,
but, I mean, that's a three-headed monster running back. So, I mean, they can slow down the pass, but then you also got to worry about Jalen's dual threat capabilities. He can run and escape from pressure like nobody's business. And when we're talking about the offenses, I think Philadelphia's is also far superior. Their offensive line is the best in the league. They were first in pass block grade this year and third in run block grade. Every single one of their offensive linemen is either in the Pro Bowl or they're a Pro Bowl alternate. So, I mean, yeah, San Francisco's defense may be good, but like I said, I think Philadelphia exploits their pass defense, which like I said, is in the lower half of the league. It's one of the worst. And I mean, you can slow down AJ Brown all you want, but then you got to deal with Dallas Goedert and Smith on the other side. So pick your poison. It's going to be tough.
Will, chime in.
I think much the same. I don't think that you can hold down AJ Brown and Devontae Smith. So if it's not AJ Brown, it's Devontae Smith. It's one or the other.
Catch up.
The only reason San Francisco is where they are because they played Dallas. If that had been any other team, they would be where Dallas is this week. I unanimously agree with the other two guys. Philadelphia, this is a runaway. High scoring matchup, high scoring game. Could be embarrassing.
Okay. All right. Well, you heard it here first. The guys have made their prediction on the games. So we'll be back to close out this episode in one moment. Once again, we thank you guys for being here, and we'll be right back with your closing arguments. This has been absolutely amazing. I appreciate you guys so much. We're going to have to get together again real soon. Maybe for basketball, baseball, another sport somehow, some way. We got to figure it out. Now, again, I'm more of a football fanatic more than anything else, but I'll glance at basketball and talk to me for the playoffs for baseball. But anyway, Will, thank you all. Will, I'll see you next week. Evan, of course, I'll see you. We're waiting for you in Austin and in Texas, so you know you can drop by anytime you feel like it.
We getting there, bro. We getting there. My schedule is increasing. But matter of fact, let's set up a Zoom call pretty soon, because I got some information that should have already been given to you guys. We need to get that to you guys.
Well, I do appreciate you all again for taking out time of your busy schedule to hang out with me, to shoot your shot at these predictions. Speaking of predictions, now that we know who you like in the championship game, Super Bowl participants and Super Bowl winner, because we won't be able to meet next weekend. I know that's an off weekend for the Pro Bowl, and then the game is the following week. So Super Bowl participants and predictions, let's go crazy and see what Ketchup has to say first.
Super Bowl participants, Cincinnati Bengals, Philadelphia Eagles, and again, I'm biased, Cincinnati the world champions this year.
Okay, any prediction on the score? You have anything in your head?
I'm going to leave that one alone.
Okay.
Whoever have the ball next.
Will, what do you have to say, sir?
I think the Bengals win this week. And I mean, my head says that Philadelphia wins this week, but I'm going to keep believing in San Francisco. I said that I believed in them, so I'm going to stick with them. I think it's going to be Cincinnati, San Francisco in the Super Bowl. And I think the Cincinnati is going to win by at least two possessions.
Oh, wow. Okay. Evan, you gotta show your face for this one.
Cincinnati Bengals versus the Philadelphia Eagles. Philadelphia wins 38-35 in overtime.
Guys, they are totally divided. Nobody is agreeing with winners. We're gonna see how this play out. I can't wait to call y'all to discuss the Super Bowl. We got to figure it out somehow, some way. We got to put together a call, a podcast, a video podcast. We might even do a live podcast for this one. And invite other people. Yeah, look, everybody is excited about that. But again, guys, thank y'all so much. I'm looking forward to this weekend as well as the Super Bowl. And please take care of yourselves. Remember, as we always say, closing out Grace Talks, remember to grow in grace. We are ordinary people doing extraordinary things. And until next time, continue to grow in grace. We'll see you soon.
If you have a question or would like us to discuss a specific topic, Grace Talks wants to hear from you. You can email us at gracetalks@graceforlife.com. That's grace_talks@grace-4-life.com.